together today is very specific, and it's this, that we have a discipleship program, and it's our hope and our belief that our discipleship program is the same program that God uses. Now, isn't there some wisdom in having the same programs that God has? I mean, there's some wisdom in that, right? Well, I think there is. And specifically, what I mean by that is this. It's in our big idea. You'll see it here. God's outreach and discipleship, or you might say evangelism and discipleship. Really, his outreach, evangelism, and discipleship program is very specific, and here it is. It's our everyday life. Our everyday life. And here's what we have been saying along the way here in our series, and that is that our everyday normal life can be lived out with gospel intentionality. In other words, if you have a faith, a Christian faith, you can have enough intentionality in the everyday stuff of life that you can help grow in your own faith and also show your faith to people who aren't sure what they think of Jesus. You can grow and you can show it. And then the hope is that by living this way in the everyday stuff of life, that there are people around you who come to know, love, and follow Jesus in their normal life. And then they do the same with their people. And in so doing, you become a part of the mission. You join the mission in making, reproducing disciples. Let's read specifically together some instructions that Jesus gave his disciples when he was about ready to give himself up to be arrested, crucified, and eventually ascend to heaven to be with the Father in heaven. We believe that Jesus left some very important commands, and he starts in John chapter 13. So you'll see this on the screen behind me. Maybe you have a Bible with you. You can open up to read with us in John chapter 13. It's the Gospels, probably the you start in Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John in the New Testament, and you'll come across it in chapter 13, okay? Two verses, 34 and 35, go like this. It's Jesus talking to his disciples, and here's what he says. So, now, I'm giving you a new commandment. Now, if you're from the Hebrew background, and Jesus says, I'm going to give you a new commandment, you might be like, okay, well, here we go. I'm already out of breath, because I got about 600-plus commandments I'm already trying to follow in the law. And now Jesus is going to drop another one on me. You can tell me, I don't know if I'm going to do it, but go ahead and drop this on me. And Jesus says, okay, let's get this straight. Here's the new command. You're going to remember this. It sounds like the great commandment. Here it is. This new commandment I give you sums up all of the commandments, and here it is. Love each other. Love each other. Just as I have loved you, you should love each other. So he tells them what to do, and then he tells them how to do it. Then he goes on to say, there's a reason we do this. Your love for one another will prove to the world that you are my disciples. And so Jesus is explaining that he has a disciple-making strategy that involves the simplicity and also the complexity of loving one another and doing it the way he did it. And to work it into your everyday life. I think about my everyday life, and I don't know about what your routines have become, but on Saturdays I have a routine. Normally it starts with homemade breakfasts. Amen. All God's people say amen. But then we go on to the taxi service we provide to our kids to sports and hair appointments and one thing or other. Along with that, we of course will taxi kids around to other kids' birthday parties. If we have a wedding, we go to the wedding, sometimes the reception. We work on some minor home projects. I say we, meaning me, and I say minor, meaning minor. Sometimes my minor home project looks like my wife saying, Dan, here, I bought the part. Here's the tool you're going to need. Can you work on this? And I'll say, sure. Can you give me 2 weeks? I'll have this done in a couple weeks. I laugh so I don't cry. You know what I mean? It also involves typically paying bills, calling Verizon, waiting on hold for an hour and a half, trying to sort out some billing questions. You know the drill. There is a routine to our Saturday. And for the sake of our conversation together, I wonder if you would think of it this way. I'm going to say routine, but I want to give you another word to think about. It's the word rhythm. Rhythm is something that happens, and it happens naturally, and you don't necessarily think about it, but it just occurs over and over and over again. You have probably a rhythm that you have adopted for your lifestyle that if you paid close attention, you could identify that it isn't just you, but most all of us probably see that life has an everyday, normal, and predictable rhythm. All people everywhere are engaged in things that happen in routine, day in and day out. Yours might include stuff like work or school and laundry and sports practices and games and groceries and cooking and eating and cleaning. And Saturdays you might have recreation, an occasional restaurant. Maybe if you don't have a new baby, you work some sleep into your routine. But you find that it's the same thing over and over. How many of you have said within the last month, it feels like all I ever do is get up for work, come home and eat, go to sleep, and do the same thing over and over again. Anybody else feel that way? My 12-year-old son put his hand up last service, and I'm like, put your hand up. What are you talking about? It's too early to feel like a murderer. I mean, you gotta wait until you're my age. If you're married, and both of you have a career, you're juggling two careers. If you have kids, you've got the pre-K, the school prep, the daycare, you're packing up meals, you've got diaper bags perhaps, you got homework folders coming in and out, making lunches, so on. Now, if you're a single parent juggling a career, you have all the same headaches, along with some loneliness, aloneness, an absence of adult conversation. Perhaps you have the tension of having an estrangement with the spouse that is providing the additional parental support and caregiving, or perhaps you're also buried in the grief of not having the other spouse helping you to take care of. But you probably notice more than anybody, you just need someone to tag and bail and let them go to work for a little bit, carry the load. Just want to tag out. And so I would be willing to bet that you all, much like the rest of us, experience these routines and these rhythms naturally. And I wanted to mention something. There's a reason why some churches, let me put it this way, the average church stalls out at about 80 people in attendance. There's a reason why the average church stalls out and doesn't necessarily get healthy and keep growing, but actually stagnates and fades. And I think there are a lot of reasons, but one of the reasons is because of the strategy in which they approach making disciples. And we're going to explain that here together, but I want you to see specifically there's one aspect of the strategy that churches are using that may not be working, and I wanted you to kind of track with me here. Look at the problem. The problem is for a lot of churches who are not healthy and growing, it's because there's a problem, and that's this. They see church mainly as an event. They see their church attendance, and they see their programs at church as mainly an event. It has a start time, a finish time. It appears on the calendar one day, and then it reoccurs again on another week, and then over and over and over again it occurs, and it reoccurs, but it happens in such a way as if you think of it as somewhere to go, something to do, it begins and ends, and it's over, and then you come back to it again in a week. And the more we fill our lives with church events and programs, the more we lose people. Here's why. Because people are busy. People are busy. And the more that you expect them to join up with these events and add these events to the calendar, the more it overwhelms people and the more people have to choose between their everyday life and church events. And by the way, the more we fill our lives with church events and programs, the more we get pulled out of everyday life with the people who don't yet know Jesus. I still remember when I was youth pastoring, someone approached me, a principal in a local school district, and asked me if I would ever consider letting my name stand to run for school board. And I thought, that is an unbelievable honor to even think about doing that. Let me think about it, pray about it. What a great opportunity, right, to get involved in the community and share life with people who are helping to lead the school district. And, you know, it took me about 24 hours to realize that, wait a second, when are the school board meetings? They happen on Wednesdays, and every Wednesday I teach about 25 to 30 Christian people in the church building. And every time, for a long time after that particular, in fact, I already envisioned myself on the school board. I was going to run for school board. I had a campaign slogan already picked out. we're going to make the school district great again. And I thought, people are going to love that. But every time I went to the church event on Wednesdays for months and months and months after that, you know what I got to thinking? What would it have been like to not go to the church building and teach a couple of dozen people who I loved? What would it have been like to have been freed up enough to spend the majority of my time investing in the school board and getting connected and getting to serve people within the school district? But here's what I discovered. The more I heaped church events on my schedule, the more I had to back out and pull out of everyday life with what was happening in my neighborhood and in my community. Something else happens that it's impossible. If church is mainly an event, we will never be able to live out our identities as a family of missionary servants because we only do it once or twice a week. Let me give you an example. There are some of you who decided perhaps in January that 2017 was the year that you get fit. The rest of you are smart enough to know you did that last year and the year before and it didn't work, so you didn't even try this year. But have you discovered, if you're a person devoted to fitness, have you discovered that there is no fitness transformation if you only eat right and move around on purpose twice a week? If you reserve Sunday and Wednesday for eating right and going to the gym or getting active, have you noticed there is no transformational impact unless your fitness routine becomes a part of your everyday life? The reason why the Christian faith, in large part, doesn't transform most of our lives is because it's set aside as an event in which we attend occasionally, maybe twice a week. It starts and it finishes, and then it shows up again on our calendar. But then we have a separate life called everyday life. And it's hard to experience any transformation when church is something that is appearing 2 days a week. It's very similar to expecting some kind of physical fitness transformation. So here's the solution. Here's what is probably what we're going to see here is the way that Jesus expected that we would live in terms of being a disciple and making disciples, and that is this. Here's the solution. It is this: to inject your faith into the things that you're already doing. How many of you are already doing everything all the time? That's what you feel like. You're always doing everything all the time, right? What if those things that you were doing all the time, every day, you found a way to inject your Christian faith into all of them every day? That means that everybody and anybody can participate, and everybody can be making disciples where they're growing and showing what it looks like all the time in the everyday stuff of life, stuff that everyone is already doing. These are the greatest opportunities for us to submit our lives to Jesus, and this is primarily what it's going to look like. Especially if you want to experience the new life that a disciple experiences and to make a difference in somebody's life. There's so many people I know who want to make a difference. They're not just serving God by being a disciple of Jesus, but they really want to make a difference in the world. And they're often wondering, how do we make a difference? Can't we plan something as a church to make a difference in people's lives? This is the primary way to do it, where you find a way to involve your faith in everyday life. And people then will get to see what it means to follow Jesus in these everyday rhythms. Now, I might point out something, that it's unlikely that you or I would ever win the world over by trying to convince them to leave their rhythms and join ours. I've already talked to people who said, Pastor, oftentimes I think about kind of, you know, what my Christian faith would be like if I was as devoted as you were, but I have a hard time giving up my Sundays. And then I think, listen, if I were you and I was spending my Sundays on the lake, washing my boat, cutting the grass, basically having the only downtime of the week on a Sunday, I completely understand what you're saying. I completely understand what you're saying, but listen to what they're saying. What they're saying is, I would join the Christian faith, but I can't give up my Sundays. The implication being that the Christian faith is a Sunday faith, right? That's the implication. Where do people learn that? They learn it from Christians. They've learned it from us. In trying to convince someone, hey, I know that you have an entire life rhythm, but I want you to join my life rhythm over here and become a Christian, for a lot of people it has nothing to do with what the gospel says or means to them. It has to do with, I can't live two separate lives. It's impossible for me to convert rhythms. Also, we don't win the world by living these separate rhythms where we have 2 days of church life and then you and I have 5 days of regular everyday life. And they run on parallel tracks. And they don't intersect with each other. They don't collide with each other. They are uniquely distinct from one another. We're not going to be able to grow up in our faith or show anyone what the Christian faith looks like. So imagine this. What might happen if we identify and focused on these everyday rhythms of life and we trained people to engage in these in light of the gospel with the purpose of making disciples and that they would become better equipped to live like a disciple right in those particular rhythms that we're focusing on. Imagine if we found what these were and we could inject the Christian faith into those things that we're already doing. How does our submission to Jesus change how we live our everyday lives? Here's the good news. Jesus has already picked the curriculum, and Jesus has already selected the strategy. Look what he says. Jesus commanded his disciples to win the world over by living and loving like him, not dying for him. I know some zealous people who are like, I would die for Jesus. That's all I want to do. Woohoo! I am crazy for Jesus. People call me a Jesus freak. And I would die for Jesus. I would give my life for Jesus. Jesus didn't ask Peter to give his life for him or to die for him. He just simply said, I just want you to live like me and love like me. That's all. You don't have to die for your faith. Eventually, Peter did. But you don't have to. That's not what I'm expecting. I'm just asking you to live like me and to love like me. And Jesus said, imagine how lame it would have been if Jesus would have said, here's the new commandment I give you. Go to church twice a week and sign up for all the discipleship classes. What if that was the strategy? Pretty easy. Count me in. But you know what? I know people who've been to every discipleship class have hardly ever missed a weekend worship service, and there is no life transformation. The reason is because that's their church rhythm. Then they've got an everyday rhythm over here that hasn't been changed or transformed or hardly impacted at all. Jesus said, this is going to require your whole life. This loving and living for me is going to require your whole life. So what do we do when Jesus says, I'm going to leave, and this is what you're going to do when I leave. When I leave, you're going to love one another, but you're going to do it a specific way, the same way I loved you. Well, how did Jesus love the disciples and others? I'll tell you, just a short few sections before we're reading here, Jesus is loving his disciples with a servant's towel. Jesus, the creator of the universe, has bent his knee down like this, and he's taken up a servant's towel, and he's washing the feet of his disciples, all 12 of them. Why is that important? Because if it were me, I would have washed the feet of 10 disciples. I wouldn't have washed the feet of Peter, who's going to deny me, and I wouldn't have washed the feet of Judas, who's going to betray me. But Jesus says, you love people the way I love you. When they fail you, you wash the feet. When they deny you or pretend they don't know you or they offend you, you wash their feet. Why? Because my disciples are so loved by the Father in heaven, they don't need to take the love from the people around them. They're complete and they're full and they're satisfied, and now they can live like missionaries. And they can love with a sacrificial kind of love, using a servant's towel. And it's so ironic because later on, Jesus says, hey, Peter, love one another, that's the new commandment. Love the way that I loved you. And if you do, you're going to win people over because they're going to see your love is so profound and so dramatic and so high impact. They're going to say, I want to be a part of that. That's something I want in on. And Peter says, forget that. I'm going to die for you. Jesus says, not really. If you want to know the truth, Peter, you're going to deny me. No. I'm going to die for you. Jesus is like, you're not getting it. You're going to deny me. 3 times, it's going to happen. And Jesus, eventually, after Peter denies him 3 times, denies that he even knows who Jesus is. He said, I don't even know this guy. You've got this wrong. You know what Peter does? He abandons full-time ministry altogether, and he goes back to his old everyday life of fishing. You know how Jesus retrieves him? He goes out to the shore. Peter's out there fishing in the boat, back to his everyday normal life. And Jesus, who Peter doesn't recognize right away because he's already been crucified, and he's kind of in a glorified state, but he doesn't really recognize him. Jesus invites Peter to come back to the shore because he wants to talk to him. And you know what Jesus is cooking up? He's cooking up on a charcoal kind of grill. He's cooking up seafood. I love the idea that God is going to repair this relationship and he's going to work in Peter's life over seafood. Praise the baby Jesus. Listen. He doesn't say, I don't mean that we ought not do this in any way, shape, or form. But Jesus does not send him a postcard and tell Peter, I want to meet you at church because we're starting a new series. And I think the series is really going to be important. In fact, we've got a book, and for $6, you can buy the book, and you're going to love these fill-in-the-blanks because we've got this great teacher everybody loves. And he's going to teach you how to get back into full-time ministry and stop denying the Savior of the world. He meets him on the shore. He says, Peter, do you love me? And Peter says, of course I love you, Jesus. He said, then feed my sheep. Become a part of the disciple-making mission, Peter. And Jesus restores him over a meal. He feeds his stomach in the everyday stuff of life. He probably, I imagine him saying, come on, fishermen, you're probably hungry. Come eat together. And he does a restorative healing work while they're eating together in the everyday stuff of life. So much happens. If you look for it, you will see most of what Jesus does in the hearts of his people, he's doing it in the everyday rhythms of life. He doesn't invite them to new campaigns, new series, new classrooms, new curriculums, and so on. Are those bad? No, please don't hear me saying those are bad and that we're never going to use them. What I'm saying is primarily our transformational disciple-making growth happens in the everyday stuff of life. And we've got to find a way to inject our faith into all of those things or we're going to be running two tracks that never intersect and neither one has any real difference, makes any real difference on the other. Hear what I'm saying? Okay. Also, Jesus shows up to a party to start his ministry, and the party goes dry. They've got wine, they're celebrating, all of a sudden they're out of wine. Somebody who knows Jesus is like, wait a second. Did anybody tell Jesus about this? Jesus, do you hear what's going on? We got this big party, everybody's here, and it's gone dry. Jesus kind of reluctantly turns their water into wine. And I can imagine everybody saying, we gotta invite this guy to every party. Because this guy is awesome. Right? Some of us are at parties. If Jesus knocked on the door and opened the door, we'd be like, uh-oh, we got to hide everything. These people are like, yes. What can you do with these stones? We'd like some seafood. Do something. Listen, here's what Jesus, just before Jesus said, love the way that I loved, he is using a servant's towel to wash people's feet. Some of the people that he's washing their feet are dirty people that he shouldn't even like, but he doesn't just not like them, he actually loves them. Then he uses seafood to reconcile with Peter. And then long before, right when he starts his ministry, he actually brings the new and better wine to the party. Everyday stuff of life, redeemed and injected with intentionality. And if you can find a way, which we want to help you do this, to inject these things into your everyday life where you're living and loving like Jesus, not dying for him, God forbid. Who's willing? Never mind, don't answer that question. But more than being willing to die, just committed to living and loving like Jesus. And I want to help you learn how to do that. By the way, when you love people the way that Jesus loved people with selfless sacrifice, it catches people's attention. People on the outside want in. And oftentimes it's just a matter of loving people well enough to really surprise them at our selfless sacrifice. So Jesus says, no one will grow up in their faith, nor will anyone really reach out unless loving people, unless your love costs you something. And if it doesn't cost you something, it's possible it's not real disciple-making and it's not real evangelism. So how can you live everyday life with intentionality? It's great when the preacher says you ought to be doing this, but I think it's a little more helpful to say, here's what it looks like. Here's what it looks like to do that. Let me give you some rhythms here to help you with this. And here's what I mean. Intentionally using these six everyday rhythms to show what it could look like to inject Jesus into your everyday life. So I'm not asking you to add another program to your life. I'm asking you to think about your rhythm and intentionally use these everyday rhythms to make disciples. These end up being the best opportunities. The first one is to eat meals together. Eat meals together. Eat meals with the disciples of Jesus who are in your life. And if you've got a pen and you're working on that hard copy, circle the word "and." And also with those who need to be disciples, who don't yet know who Jesus is. For years and years, I grew up with two sets of friends. I had my Christian friends, or my parents might refer to them as my church friends, and then I had my other friends, school friends, so on. Here's what Jesus is saying. Jesus is saying, with the everyday routines of eating together, you often can bring those two worlds together, and one world gets to experience and love on the other world. And you can do that around a meal. And you can do that in a way that gives you the opportunities three times a day. Think of some of you who eat lunch every day with coworkers, or you eat lunch with classmates. And here's what Jesus would probably say. In this disciple-making strategy, he would say, when you're eating, be sure that you rarely ever eat alone. Invite someone in, or if you're like me, invite yourself over. But don't eat alone. Some of you eat three times a day, probably. I like to say I eat from 3 to 7 times a day, if you include going to Gannon's as a meal. It's 8 times a day. That gives you that many opportunities to get around a meal and to discover that we're all really the same because we need a meal. And like any human being on the planet, that meal has to come from somewhere. And you can give thanks not just that you have a meal and it's not going to make you sick, but that there's a God who created the seed and the soil and the sun and the rain to help that meal come to life. And we enjoy it together. Next, listen, listen, listen. Let me repeat that again for those of you who weren't listening. Listen to the word, okay? Listen to what God says to you in the Bible. Listen to others and listen to the Spirit of God and pay close attention. What does this mean? This means that there are regular rhythms in our lives where we have to slow our soul down and listen to God. And we have to pay attention to what people around us are saying about themselves and about their lives. Oftentimes when I ask God, God, would you work in my heart to help me love people better? He says the same thing over and over again. Dan, I've already told you how to love people to better. Stop talking all the time. Start listening to people better. Listen to their story. Listen to what matters to them. Listen to what's happening with their family. Listen to what they're facing in their medical challenges. If they just listen and stop talking. And I try to tell God, it's a part of my personality. It's the way I am. He goes, no, you're just self-absorbed. I go, no, don't tell me that. And he says, it's true. And I say, it's not true. And it strikes me funny. But here's what I'm asking you to consider. It's a routine for us to listen. And if you get used to listening, you're going to hear things that you haven't heard before. God's going to speak to you and direct you. He's going to raise needs in people's lives to your heart and in your ears. And you're going to get a chance to know people better because you're listening to them well. And then when they have a need, you know what happens? God puts the two together. You hear him speaking to you about how to meet their need because you're listening. And something dynamic and dramatic can occur, but not unless we're listening. That's one rhythm. If we just get the hang of injecting that into our love, then we can open our ears as an act of love. We can care for someone. Quiet your soul. Listen to God. Close the mouth once in a while and tune into what people are saying. And God will, he will be at work. Number three, story. I don't know, this is kind of for some of you this might be hard to grasp, but story is a rhythm. We're oftentimes either listening to a story that someone's telling a story, or we're sitting in front of a movie screen or a TV and we're watching a story. Or we want to know what the story is, right? That someone might tell you if you kind of catch them at a weak moment and you want the story. See what I mean? We love stories, we tell stories, we hear stories, we watch stories. Most of us, one of our unique rhythms as human beings is to be in a story. Or to tell the story. So here's what I'm asking you to consider as a part of disciple making. Know and rehearse God's story. If you are following Jesus and you have saving faith and he has saved your soul, and then you must begin learning the story of God. You have to be able to tell the story of God. If you struggle telling God's story, it might be symptomatic of not really knowing it or living in it, and here's why. I've noticed that unless I'm telling my story, I have trouble telling the story. You know what I mean? When you're trying to tell someone else's joke or someone else's story, it's not quite as comfortable as telling your story. When God's story becomes a part of your story, I should say you become a part of God's story, it gets more natural. So we can learn to tell this story and learn other people's stories and consider how aspects of God's story and their story bring redemption and restoration to theirs. And some people say, Pastor, I don't know where to start getting a handle on the story. I tend to start with, like, Jesus died for your sins and he forgave you of all your sins. I would recommend starting at the beginning of the story. We have been given away for people who are having their babies dedicated for a long time, or even my wife and I giving these away as gifts. It's called the Jesus Storybook Bible. It's written for kids, but adults will love it too. And it helps you discover the major themes of the Bible, and that the major story, the hero of the story throughout the whole Bible is Jesus, and it does so in a magical way that is so refreshing and so helpful. We also have on our church app, we have the Bible tab, which helps you discover and learn God's story from start to finish. So if you know God's story and you spend time listening to other people's stories, you begin to press lovingly, be able to bring those stories together, the story of God to bear on somebody's story and what they're facing. And you and I can start with telling the story to our own kids, reading them the story. Next, number four, bless. Number four, bless. Kind of a generic word, kind of loses its meaning after over time as we have used it so much. But here's what it basically means. We live in such a way that you wouldn't be able to explain what you do or why you do it without needing to talk about Jesus. So here's what we believe. That we believe that we have so many things that God has blessed us with, but he hasn't blessed us to own these things. He's blessed us in order for us to bless other people. Let me give you an example of what I mean. The author of the book that we are using to kind of supplement our series is this book here called Saturate. I think there's one more of these left on the shelf, but this is such a great kind of manual to kind of live the way that I'm describing here today. But the author tells a story about their small group, and they made a list of the things that God had blessed them with that they were going to bless other people by giving it away. And he said there was a couple within their group who had identified that they didn't have any real blessings to give away because they were in so much credit card debt. While they were discovering this, the rest of the group discovered that they had enough resources to pay off their credit card debt, and they collected their money and paid it off. And there was a couple in the small group who had expertise in financial planning and budgeting, and they spent extra time with this couple to train them how to flip their budget so they had more coming in than going out, and eventually their faithfully meeting their own needs gave way to fruitfully collecting more than they needed, and they could start giving and blessing people too. What a great picture. Here's the premise. Whatever God has given to you, he's given so that he can work through you by giving the excess to other people, blessing them. And then, when the excess gets to be enough, people start asking questions. The only explanation is all the abundance that God has given us, with no strings attached, by his grace. And when we really come to know one another's story, we also come to know how we can best bless one another, because we know what the other's needs are. Really are. So I wonder if you took an inventory of your life, what do you have that is within your stewardship possession that you could give away and really, really bless somebody? One person told me a story about their small group that they call a missional community. They're a community of gospel Christians who are on mission looking for ways to show and share the gospel with people and saturate their places that they lived and worked and so on. And they said, we discovered that as we met regularly at this diner, we built a relationship with the server. You've heard me mention this before, maybe, but they discovered that their server had to pull their child out of school because they ran out of money. And that they were going to have to send them to this other school that they didn't want to send them to. And this missional community went back and regrouped and said, wouldn't it be great if we had enough money to give to our server and they could put their student back in the school? And they said they took up a collection, they pooled their money, and they came up with the right amount of money to send them back to school, not for one semester, but for two semesters to send them back to their local private school. And can you imagine this server breaking down and saying, this can't be happening. I don't understand why this is happening. How is this happening? Which led to a genuine conversation about how God has given us so much freely with no strings attached. His grace is so meaningful and so life-changing. We just thought we'd share a little bit of it with you. And you swing the doors of care and affection open to people like the server like that. When you are able to bless people with all that he's given you. Okay, number five, celebrate. Celebrate. Bring what the party lacks in a generous and loving way. As people who are made in the image of God, we're created to do what God does. And all through the scriptures, God celebrates in festivals and banquets. And he's given us as believers the privilege of bringing to the party that which the party lacks. You remember Jesus went to the party, it lacked wine. He turns the water into wine and they celebrate, thank God for Jesus. He just helped our party. In some cases, parties in your neighborhood or parties that you get invited to, when you show up as the believer or a group of believers, oftentimes the party is only lacking a cleanup crew. How fantastic would it be if you take on the role with your servant's towel of cleaning up at your block parties or your neighborhood parties or your, you still do all those network marketing parties, right? I don't want to say any names of companies. But when you show up, imagine hanging around later and doing the dirty work of cleaning up. Why? Because you just want to, in the everyday rhythm of life, you just want to share and show what Jesus' affection and what his care was really like. This author of this book tells a story about how they got so enmeshed with their neighbors and they were celebrating regularly with their neighbors, who oftentimes their neighbors would drink too much and they wouldn't be able to get across the street to their own house. And he said, we would scoop up the neighbor and we'd walk up to their house and I'm tucking my 45-year-old neighbor into their bed, taking their shoes off, putting them into bed. Why? Because he said, that's our servant towel. We're washing their feet. We're bringing to the party that which the party lacked, a cleanup crew. Every day, rhythm of life, injecting our faith into the way that we live. Bring the better wine. Bring and take up the servant's towel for cleanup. Bring something to the party that is missing. And then lastly, recreate. Recreate. I'll go through this really quick. Recreate means our Father intends for us to be carefree enough under his provision and his protection, that we can enjoy both our work and our rest. Here's what I know about some of you, because I think we all share this in common. We are really, really good at sharing our rest until we start thinking about how we ought to be working, right? And then when we spend time working, we have trouble enjoying our work because we feel a lot of pressure to perform. Believers approach the work with the idea that this is something God has given us. We don't need to work to earn God's approval, so we can work freely and we can work hard, knowing that we're just participating in a privilege that God gave us to work, but we're not trying to win anyone over, prove ourselves, or promote ourselves, so we can rest. And also, when we're done working, we can recognize that God has given us recreation to restore and refill and replenish our bodies, and we can really enjoy it. How many of you would love to really rest when you're resting? How many of you would love to be with some people who are trying to rest, but while you're on vacation, if you're with some friends and they spend half their time on vacation, the other half of their time on their phone or on their computer working, they can't really enjoy their rest. God has given us the freedom to rest and really relax and create things. Some of you who've been gifted with the ability to create things with your hands or your mind or some kind of creativity, God's given that to us. We just have to slow down and recognize that real believers, really submitted to Jesus, know how to recreate. When I visit these funerals, I often leave funerals with the same attitude, which is, that's it, this is final. I'm only going to spend my time doing meaningful things, especially when my kids need me and want me. My 9-year-old asks me about 3 times a day, Dad, what are you doing? Can you play? So 3 times a day, I've got to live with the guilt of saying, nobody, I'm working. Okay? And then recently, at a funeral, it occurred to me that there isn't going to be anybody at my funeral saying, you know what I appreciate about Pastor Van, those extra few minutes a day that he took working hard. I'm so grateful for those. I would rather hear my kids say, my dad, every time I said, Dad, can you play? My dad dropped what he was doing, and he spent a few minutes. I mean, the kid's 9 years old. He only needs a few minutes. It feels like a week to him, right? Remember those days? Just a few minutes. Whatever, here's what I'm learning. Whatever I'm doing, it can wait, and I can really enjoy being with my kids. Do a good job when I'm working, work hard and work well. But when I'm not, be present with my people. Because my people need my full presence. And when you're submitted to Jesus, you're able to work hard and rest well. And spend time creating things that God has made you in His image to create. And the question, of course, is can you play? Can you rest? And in these six rhythms, Jesus' saturation occurs with every man, woman, and child in our life. Every place having a daily encounter with Jesus through the words that you say and then the works or deeds that you do, and we start to see that God is working in us and through us. And it's my hope that you can imagine what that might look like.